WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. Michael Barson is a pop culture maven who we've called on several times to talk about B-movies and romance comics. You may be familiar with his postcard books. His new book is about what he describes as the pop culture residue of the Cold War, the flotsam and jetsam that shows just how far gone America once was.
Speak English, comrade. Remember, that is about the only freedom you do not have in this town. It's American town.
Americans, they have too many freedoms.
That is another thing you must remember, comrade. For one day it will be your mission to destroy those bourgeois capitalist freedoms.
That's a scene from Red Nightmare. In the new book, Better Dead Than Red, Michael Barson writes about the pop culture that fueled public hysteria during the height of the Red Scare. Movies like I Was a Communist for the FBI, TV shows like I Led Three Lives, comic books like This Godless Communism, even Red Menace bubblegum cards. He also reprints articles from popular mainstream magazines. In 1943, when the Soviets were our allies in the war, Life magazine ran a special Soviet issue to help acquaint Americans with the Russians. But just 4 years later, Look ran an article called How to Spot a Communist.
The turnabout was dramatic and quick. And one of the funniest things is that there was in Look magazine a pro-Stalin piece called A Guy Named Joe, which was also a popular film in 1944 with Spencer Tracy. But A Guy Named Joe, Uncle Joe Stalin, and a look at what a warm-hearted guy he was with, you know, little peasant girls sitting on his knee while he read them stories and talking about his hobbies and so forth. And they used a cover painting to begin the issue in 1944. In 1947, they used the exact same cover painting, and inside is Stalin yet again, but now it's the Soviet Empire and its treachery and you know, its dangers. And the two issues look identical, except they have different dates on them. So, of course, Life and Look were at the top of the journalistic empire at that time. So you're not talking about the National Enquirer here, which probably, had it existed then, would have had its own material. But this is mainstream, respectable American media doing a 180-degree turn.
I feel compelled to read a paragraph from the Look magazine feature, How to Spot a Communist. Because the whole communist apparatus is geared to secrecy, it is not always easy to determine just who is a communist. But whether he is a party cardholder or a fellow traveler, the American communist is not like other Americans. To the communist, everything, his country, his job, his family, takes second place to his party duty. Even his sex life is synchronized with the obligations of the cause. And, of course, the cause is capitalized. But that seems to be a running theme here, that communists have lousy sex lives. And in a lot of the Red Scare movies, you know, women who are like staunch defenders of the party are cold and asexual, whereas women who defect from the party or won't go near the party are more attractive to men.
Well, there is that strain running through there, although many issues of such magazines as Police Gazette came out with tales about the seductive abilities of the Soviet spies that were female and how they were luring our GIs into betraying America's secrets. And, of course, betraying America's secrets was probably the single most important concern of the day. I mean, that's ultimately what the Rosenberg story was about. But it's true that if you go back to even a friendly film like Ninotchka, you can't get any colder than Garbo is at the beginning of that. And that was our perception, our stereotype of the Russian Soviet character. And, you know, many was the story that they could only be saved by being exposed to the charming wonders of Western democracy and you know, more specifically, us goofy, lovable Americans.
I think we have a film excerpt here that will illustrate one of the points you just made, which is that in some of these Red Scare movies and in some other work as well, it is shown that communist women can lure men with their sexual wiles. And this is a movie called The Red Menace. And in an early scene, a woman in the party lures a man up to her apartment. And when she gets him there, of course, he wants sex, but she wants to talk about the party.
You didn't learn this in the Boy Scouts. Bill, maybe you better go home. Take this along. Read it.
So, it's all been just a come on for the party.
Oh, don't say that, Bill.
This is a 1949 movie, The Red Menace. Where does this fit in the Red Scare period after World War II?
Well, 1949 was about as hot as it got. It was just before McCarthy really rose to the power he would assume for the next 3 or 4 years. He was still a year away from really becoming the focal point. But even without Joseph McCarthy, you had a very, very nervous populace here. And one of the things I try to deal with in the book, which is not a very serious look at this subject, I should stress, is that the reason everyone was so nervous was because of what the media was telling them. Now, this movie from Republic Studios was not probably taken seriously by anyone. It came out the same year as an RKO movie called I Married a Communist, and there had been some before it as well, like The Iron Curtain with Dana Andrews. But forget the movies. The editorials in the daily papers, the weekly magazines like the Saturday Evening Post and Life and Look, all of this was sending a message that you could not but help absorb, which was that we were in terrible and imminent danger. And it's just incredible to me, and I would think to most of us now, with the perspective we have of 40 or so years, that everyone could get sucked into this as if it were mass hypnosis or mass hysteria. But this was the case. And, you know, there might have been the occasional situation where an actual spy was unearthed somewhere or some documents changed hands and they actually found who did it. This certainly existed. But the way it was portrayed, it was as if you might at any moment at 3 in the morning wake up to find your bed surrounded by the Russian infantry. That was the mindset of the period.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Michael Barson, and he's an expert on many areas of American popular culture. His new book is called Better Dead Than Red, a nostalgic look at the golden years of Russia-phobia, red-baiting, and other commie madness. We're going to take a short break and then talk some more. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is Michael Barson. His new book, Better Dead Than Red, is about red menace pop culture in America. And we've had him on the show several times in the past to talk about B-movies and love comics and other areas of pop culture. What are the Red Scare movies that you'd recommend seeing, either because they're so bad or they're so surprisingly good?
Well, so bad that they're good, I guess, is always my aesthetic. So working from that, I would say that The Red Menace, which has just recently been made available on video, is a wonderful way to start. It has no big stars in it, but don't let that stop you. My Son John, which Paramount put out in 1952 from director Leo McCarey, who had won Oscars for movies like Going My Way, is one of the looniest of these, with Helen Hayes as this totally over-the-top mother who finds out her son is a communist, and Dean Jagger as the father who's an American Legionnaire who would love to take him out into the backyard and give him the thrashing of his life, and the great late Robert Walker as the son who sneers his way through his his poor innocent parents until he finally realizes that, just as they'd been telling him, the Communist Party was rotten to the core. Those are two of my favorites. And I Married a Communist from 1949 with Robert Ryan shortly was re-released by RKO under Howard Hughes's directive, and it's more easily found now as The Woman on Pier 13. That is a terrific film, almost a film noir, in fact, but with the communists taking over the docks and the labor unions and some great dialogue. These things just went too far, and they weren't even that successful, really.
Commercially.
Compared to the day's biggest successes. I mean, these were not the number one box office hits, but even a movie that doesn't do that well is seen by millions and millions of people. So I think they probably did have their own effect.
Do you think that the studios made some of these Red Scare movies to get HUAC off their backs?
There's no question about it. They had cooperated in the early 40s doing the pro-Russia films to make the Office of War Information or whatever happy that they were doing their part to rally support for Russia, and they just as quickly had to cover their tracks by putting out the obligatory anti-Soviet film. And you had John Wayne appearing in things like Big Jim McLean and Jet Pilot, where, you know, he was the American set against the commies. And you had Clark Gable. I mean, everybody was in these in one way or another because the studios knew that sooner or later they would be called on to explain what they were doing in 1944, making, you know, Song of Russia or The North Star or whatever, and this was the best answer.
So how do you think this Red Scare stuff looks different after the Cold War, after the collapse of the Soviet Union?
Well, I think we can see that we are capable of some very foolish behavior, for one thing. You know, when Eisenhower was asked if he would pardon the Rosenbergs in 1953, just before they were executed for being atomic spies, he was quoted on the front page of the New York Times reporting on the execution. He said, "Absolutely not. They led to the deaths of 10 million people. And, you know, essentially good riddance." You know, it was a shocking response and certainly not one of the more comical ones of the time. But it indicates that we did some things that are amazing now with the hindsight of 4 or 5 decades. And you would like to think that we might not give in to that impulse and act that way again. But I think it really is part of the American character, and I think in this book there are laughs to be found. All the material that's in here is real material from different periods, such as we've discussed. But beneath the laughter, there's a veil of tears. I mean, lives were ruined for no reason. The excesses of J. Edgar Hoover have been well documented by many people. Careers never got back to where they were, and just our behavior as a nation was shameful. So although I hope that there are amusing moments experienced here, this isn't really intended to be nothing but yawks, because I think it's also a disturbing part of our national character that we're capable of this. We've done it again and again. We've done it with the American Indian in the past, and we've done it with many other nationalities aside from the nation of the USSR. So that's why there's, a mixed message in this book.
Michael Barson, thanks a lot for talking with us.
Thank you, Terry.
Michael Barson's new book about Red Scare pop culture in America is called Better Dead Than Red, and it's published by Hyperion.